I'm Jenny.
Hi, I'm Scott.
Welcome to the very first episode of the Reading Envy podcast.
Yes, welcome, welcome. We're here to talk about books, of course, because that's what we do.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about what we've been reading recently. Mm-hmm. And in future episodes, we'll have other readers on to talk about what they've been up to.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Me too.
And we're not going to limit ourselves to any genres. Anything goes. Nonfiction, fiction, whatever we've been reading is fair game for us to talk about here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, hopefully the folks who are reading or listening to this are readers maybe looking for their next book.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll give you some ideas and hopefully we'll get ideas from you because that's where I get my best books.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I learn a lot that way.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. First episode of Reading Envy.
Great. And I think I'm going to start.
Excellent.
So
what are you going to start with?
Well, I have to tell you, lately I've been reading some very puzzling books. So I'm going to start with one that's the most puzzling in my mind right now. I just finished it last night. Stayed up past midnight writing or trying to write a review of it. It's called The Einstein Intersection by Samuel R. Delaney. And
I have heard of him.
Yes.
Famous science fiction writer.
Absolutely. Except for I have never read anything he's written. And so I had him on my list of goals to read in 2014. And then this book got picked for the Sword and Laser for January. So I thought, well, I'll try it. And it is a crazy book. I mean, it's only about 150 pages, but it crams in so many ideas. So humans have been gone from Earth for, I think it's supposed to be at least 30,000 years.
Wow.
But they've left behind a computer and an AI that are still going. And a lot of radiation. And there are these aliens, and they come back and they try to inhabit humanity and try to limit themselves to how humanity is limited with two genders plus one androgynous gender. And there are a lot of mutations and genetic variation. And then there's the character of Lobi. He's kind of the hero. And there are, oh man, it's so complicated. There are these characters that aren't allowed to reproduce because they're kind of lesser and they're starting to die off. And so he's trying to go on a quest to get them back. There's so much more I could say about it. It's so complicated. There's a lot of metaphor. There are dragons, herds of dragons.
Herds of dragons.
You just like anything you could throw in there, it's in there. I'm still kind of like trying to separate it all out in my head. Oh, and the sun has pulled in two more planets. So Earth is planet number 5.
Wow.
So that's where we are in space.
Well, that's pretty cool. I was just looking this up while you were talking. I mean, I've had this book in my hand before.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm sure I've owned it before, but I don't think I ever read it. But it's not very long, right?
It isn't, but so dense.
Yeah. So, wow, I remember reading at least the opening of a book that he wrote called Dahlgren, which was huge. I mean, it had to be like 800 pages long.
I'd like to try that one.
Yeah, so I'm looking here, and it says that it was published in 1967. This is The Einstein Intersection.
Yes.
So plays with gender and things, huh?
Yeah, and he actually wrote the whole thing while he was on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And so he always puts quotes at the beginning of each chapter, and towards the end, he starts quoting himself from his travel journals.
Oh, wow.
And you're kind of like, what does this have to do with anything? And that's kind of the question. It's really hard to sort out. But that's why my brain hasn't stopped thinking about it.
Hmm.
I just keep asking more questions, which is fun.
Well, that is fun. I mean, I love books that stay with you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I guess that's really all I have to say. I'm going to keep thinking about it, but.
So we're going to talk about this on Sword and Laser.
There's this ongoing discussion, but people in general are not liking it.
Oh.
And I always like the books that nobody likes. So.
Yeah. Didn't they toss away a Stanislaw Lem book?
Yeah, that's the other one.
I've heard a term being tossed around called lemmed. I've lemmed this book, and that breaks my heart. Poor guy.
Well, everyone hated it so much that that became the term, but it was the memoirs found in a bathtub, and it was so cute.
Oh, he's a really good writer too.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Delaney, Grandmaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's, but,
that's right. Yeah. He's written a lot of really good stuff.
I'd like to try more of his this year. It's mm-hmm. part of my goal. So,
you'd recommend that one?
Oh, to special readers. I think the more you know about mythology and the 1960s and the Bible, and dragons, the better.
Well, now I've got to read it. That sounds pretty cool.
He uses the 1960s as a far past Earth mythology too.
Oh,
so mm-hmm. the Elvis and the Beatles are godlike characters.
So, as they are now.
Yes, but they're even like, instead of saying God,
even more godlike.
Elvis.
Wow. All right. Well, that sounds interesting. Mm. Cool. So my first book is called The Hot Rock. It's by Donald Westlake, who's a recently passed crime novelist. Kind of, I guess I'd describe him as a comic crime novelist. I'm not sure that that's fair. The stuff that I've read so far has had a comic twinge to it. But I think that he writes more serious stuff. Called Parker novels. And I think he may use a pseudonym for that. I'd need to look that up though. But this one it's the first Dortmunder novel. Now, Dortmunder is kind of an ex-con. You know, almost everybody in here has spent time in jail, and it's not a big deal to spend time in jail. It was written in 1971, I believe. So he's a guy who does heists, and that's why I enjoyed this book so much. You know, I love a good heist movie, and that's really what this was, it's a heist novel, and I'm looking forward to reading some of the other ones, but it was a really fast moving, funny book about heists. And the way that it starts is someone comes to him with a potential job, and there's a fake African country that there's an ambassador from this country. It's not fake in the novel. It's real in the novel. It's a real African country in the novel, but it's fake in real life. But anyway, this ambassador wants a gem stolen from a rival African country. And the gem happens to be on tour in New York City. So, Dortmunder and his cohorts devise this heist, and they go in there and they steal it. Only things don't go exactly as planned. And then it ends up that he needs to do another heist to fix the first one, and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time it's done, you get your fill of heists. There's several of them that happen. But so I laugh while I'm even talking about it. It was fun.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Is it all set in New York City then, or is some of it set in Africa?
No, it's all set in New York City. Yeah, and I listened to the audiobook version. It was read by Jeff Woodman. I got it from Audible. They've got, I don't know how many Dortmunder novels there are, but I'm hooked. I'll definitely be reading more. The next one's called Bank Shot. Yeah, overall, this one's got 4 out of 5 stars on Audible. But it was a really pleasant listen, really fast. I listened to it on an airplane mostly. Really enjoyed it. A lot of fun. Heck of a lot of fun.
So do they go in order?
The Audible audiobooks?
Yeah, like, is it part of an overarching story?
I don't know if it's... You know, it seems to me that the real overarching story stuff is later in publishing. You know, like when Star Trek was, you know, they first started coming out with Star Trek books, you know, Kirk and Spock would have to be in the same place at the end as they were in the beginning, you know. So if anything that happened in the middle couldn't disturb the Enterprise's crew, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It had to end at the same place that it started all the time. And so I think that that concept of the series that actually... moves over time. I feel like that's pretty recent. I don't know what your feeling is. Other than that makes sense. Other than like a trilogy, but you know, for anything that's got a whole bunch of volumes. So anyway, I guess I'm just saying that I don't know on this case, but I wouldn't expect it. The Audible has 14 of them. So I don't know. I don't know what to expect in the next one. If they're even going to remember what happened in the first book, I don't even know.
Right. Well, in some ways that makes it easier because you can just dip in and out of it.
Right, right. But Donald Westlake is an exceptional writer. It's super clear, really down to earth. I mean, all his characters are people. You never feel like you're reading wooden people. I think he's a really worthwhile writer to read. I've read just a few of his books, and I don't know why I don't read more, because I will read more.
Yeah,
he's just a lot of fun.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's all I've got to say about that one, but I recommend it highly.
We both picked books from, you know, 60s and 70s for our first book. That was not on purpose, everyone.
No, it wasn't. In fact, yeah, I didn't know what she was going to say, and I don't think she knew what I was going to say.
Mm-mm.
So.
It's funny.
It is funny. Yep. So what's next?
My next book is Long Division by Keese Lehman. It might be Keese, but I think it's Keese. There's just an S in there. Now, I had never heard of this book, but then
and
it
I
got.
I haven't either.
Yeah. It's listed on the Tournament of Books. I believe this is a first novel. The author's fairly young, very young, actually. Somewhat known for an essay that was published a few years back. But it's set in Mississippi. And the main character is Sitoyen, or City, Coldson. He's a 14-year-old. And in the beginning of the novel, he kind of loses his cool at a quiz contest, and it hits YouTube, so it's very current, you know.
Except for
then, he starts time traveling. And in Mississippi, if you're African-American and you're time traveling, there can be some issues. So he first goes back to 1985, or perhaps it's just his doppelganger in a novel that he picked up in the guidance counselor's office that's in 1985, but then someone goes back to 1964... I'm a little unclear. The time traveling part was a little bit confusing, but what I love about this book is the voice of that character. Like, you really get a sense of him. He's not perfect, but it's a really strong voice. I haven't felt that strong of a voice since I read The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao by Juno Diaz, or Juno. And so it reminded me of that in really strange ways, maybe in the detail and the focus of someone who is maybe not the most popular kid in school. So it was a great book. I actually took a break halfway through, like for a few days, just because I was not wanting to finish it too soon. So don't really have much more to say about it, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it sounds like a kind of a knot, and you're saying you're not quite clear on exactly what happened.
Yeah, but there's definitely time traveling. So 1964 in Mississippi, you know, has
a lot of
race relation issues and stuff like that.
Heck yeah.
So for someone from this year or previous year to experience that in real life is, you know, a scary thing. So
yeah, you know, I haven't read a book called Kindred by Octavia Butler.
I haven't either, but it's on my shelf.
It sounds like that's the premise of that book.
Yeah, I get the sense that that one's maybe more, she immerses in that world and that's it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, she really experiences it. This guy can easily control how he moves back and forth.
Hmm.
So, and he sees himself and his children in the future. Like, it breaks a lot of the time traveling rules, you know, where you're not supposed to mess up with any of the continuum. Some people stay in the decades they get transported to. So that's, I think, where it kind of go, well.
That's interesting. Would you consider that a science fiction novel?
No.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's very much more on the literary side.
Okay.
And I'm also not sure if I would consider it young adult or not.
Mm-hmm.
You could make that argument.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Now, is that up for an award?
Yeah. I just remember
you were talking on Goodreads about it. So that's the only reason I know that. It was on which list?
Well, it's not really an award. Well, it kind of is. The Morning News, which is a website out there, they do this thing called the Tournament of Books, where they have this list of books and they go through like kind of like March Madness, where they put two books up next to each other. They have a guest judge, and then there are these two people that do commentary.
Wow.
And so I like to read along with it and pick who I think should win.
Oh, cool.
It's really fun.
That does sound fun. I will have to look that up.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, next up for me is the first book of Lord of the Rings. It's called The Fellowship of the Ring, and it's hard to even talk about, you know.
It's a hefty one.
Yeah, but it is. I haven't read it since high school, and we're going to do this on Good Story. A good story is hard to find podcast. We're going to have a lengthy discussion about it. But what I wanted to say here is that I'm really surprised by it, by how good it is. You know, I read it in high school, and I thought, okay, I thought it was pretty good. And but now I'm reading it again, having seen the movies probably, you know, 3 or 4 times, and now I'm reading the book, and I'm finding there's two things that jump out at me. One of them is the depth of it. I don't think I've read many things that have this depth. And, you know, it could be the world building or whatever you want to call it. But as I read this book, I feel more present in the setting than in most books I read. Hmm. And I find that a little bit startling. And then the second thing is the pacing of it is really refreshing. And it was written... boy, I wish I had written that down, but I think it was the 40s, maybe even earlier. I'd have to look that up. I wish I'd looked that up before, but, he was really heavily influenced by his experience in World War I. But the pacing of this book is pretty darn slow, yet I don't feel bored by it at all. And I think that surprises me. But it also makes me very happy, you know, because most of the books that I read that are published lately are just like bang, 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 as fast and as furious as you can be. And I really get weary of it.
Yeah.
So this is a real change of pace, but yet it's really refreshing. And I wonder why... we can't have some books like, I would imagine they get rejected by publishers and things, but you know, to stop and look around and feel where you're at, I think is a really valuable thing. And in this society that we're in, you know I'm going way too fast. Hmm. I feel like that all the time. Like I'm going way too fast, but to read a book that takes it easy and takes it slow,
without boring me
at all. Because, you know, the characters will stop and they'll talk about something. So what they're talking about is always interesting. And most of the chapters open with some kind of a few paragraphs about where they're at, you know, this setting. And he describes it, and it's beautiful descriptions. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, I'm there. You know, but so I'm really stunned by it. And, you know, I don't use the word lightly. I really am surprised at how good it is. And I'm looking forward to talking about it at length.
Yeah.
I imagine everybody knows what Lord of the Rings is, so I don't know if I need to describe it. But
well, we think we know.
Yeah, we think we know. We think we
from
know
from the movies.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting too to talk about the movies and the choices that they made. But we're not going to talk about that in that podcast. That's a totally separate discussion. So.
So do you have like a favorite character or a favorite storyline or anything like that?
Well, the whole idea of Frodo being sort of chosen, I mean, he steps forward and says, I will do this. There's this moment. So my favorite part of the book of the Fellowship of the Ring is the Council of Elrond, which is where... you know, Frodo the Hobbit and Gandalf, and there's a human named Boromir and another human named Aragorn and a dwarf named Gimli and a elf named Legolas, and some other people are there, and they're all deciding what to do about this great evil that they have in front of them. And that whole discussion and that whole decision, and then having Frodo stand up and say, I will take it. And he is apparently the weakest one of the lot, you know? And, right. So, I mean, it's really touching. It's, so
sounds like a book, powerful moment.
It really is. So in that book, that's my favorite moment. So I'm almost finished with the whole Lord of the Rings now.
Wow.
But I had to pick the first one because I've been, using all my reading time reading Lord of the Rings.
Huh.
So
are you, does it make you want to immerse yourself into some like other really epic fantasy after that?
Well, you know, it doesn't. It does not. I've read some epic fantasy, but I'm not what you'd call an epic fantasy fan.
Mm-hmm.
I've read, there's a book called Sword of Shannara by Terry Brooks, which is very good. But when you, after you're finished, if you step back and you look at it close, you're like, wow, that was Lord of the Rings. It's almost character for character Lord of the Rings. So you have that kind of fantasy. And then you have things like what Brandon Sanderson is writing. Mm-hmm. And I do have an interest in reading his epic fantasy series. I think there's a new book coming out called Words of Radiance, I think is book two. I actually have book one on my my Kindle, because it was being sold for really cheap. And I said, oh, I better grab it. So I did grab it, but it's 1,000-pager.
Oof.
And I'm not sure when I'll get to it, but I am interested in him. But as a rule, sword and sorcery is not something that interests me a whole lot. But Lord of the Rings, it transcends that. It's just something that, you can tell, it's got the dwarves and the elves and the axes and the bows and the swords and the magic, but it's transcendent. It's not, it's almost like you read this one and you probably don't need to read any more of that type, because nothing else of that type is going to reach it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It transcends the genre. It's just, I don't know that it'll ever be matched. And
it's what
it
everyone's
be.
Striving for.
Exactly. And it's amazing that for so many years, 100 years now almost, he's been the gold standard and he remains that. And everybody is kind of starting to, they've been imitating him. But, the fantasy genre in general, I think over the last, 15 years, I would actually argue that it's been more interesting than the science fiction field. But this fantasy that I'm talking about would not be dwarves and elves and swords and sorcery. It's, the Neil Gaiman type of fantasies.
Yeah.
That kind of fantasy has been what has been driving the whole, science fiction and fantasy genres, I guess. Here in the United States, those are hand in hand, but I understand it in other countries, they're actually two separate sections.
Science fiction and fantasy?
Yeah,
or
science fiction and fantasy. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, well, that gets confusing.
I was told that by someone one time. Robert J. Sawyer, he says, science fiction has more in common with mystery than it does with fantasy. And a solid science fiction story, he may be right, because you're following the facts and you're solving something. A lot of the times the point of the story is whatever's going on in the story is solvable. You know what I mean?
Right.
And in fantasy, that's not really the case. You're not writing about something that could be, purposefully, a lot of points to fantasy, but I find it interesting that it's not the Tolkien kind of fantasy that's really, been the most interesting to me anyway. But clearly the Tolkien kind of fantasy, since Tolkien, well, actually it was Terry Brooks who revived it. Tolkien was there and he was alone for a long time. And then the Terry Brooks Shannara series really started the whole epic fantasy subgenre. You know, that was back in the 80s. And I think it was 79, actually, that Sword of Shannara was published. But then after that, then you started having, you know, all these people that we've heard of, like David Eddings and Stephen R. Donaldson. I mean, who else can you think of? But right
Steven
now,
Steven Erickson.
Yeah. Steven Erickson's more recent, and so is Brandon Sanderson. And Brandon Sanderson is very successful.
Patrick Rothfuss.
Yeah, exactly.
I even read those.
Cool. Now, yeah. Patrick Rothfuss, is he writing what you'd call Tolkien-esque stuff?
Well, having only read one Tolkien book.
Well, I mean, you can assume from the movies that you've got, you know, you've got the feel anyway, or actually that's arguable even so, but you've got the genre anyway, I think, you know, if you've seen the movies, you've got the genre.
It's not Middle Earth as much, but it, you know, there are these ancient libraries and weapons that matter and beings that aren't quite human. I mean, you know, there's a lot of elements of it in there.
Yeah.
And the story is pretty intricate.
Yeah. See, that stuff interests me a lot, you know, and Rothfuss has been recommended to me too by my son. He said, you got to read these.
Yeah.
And they're huge. They're huge books. And, he listened to them on audio and yeah, they're huge. They're like 40 hours each or something like that. And you're just like, my gosh. But yeah, Rothfuss is somebody I like to read. But I always, I assumed that Rothfuss was kind of more on the Gaiman side of things, you know. And Gaiman, I mean, I guess with the whole fantasy genre, you really can't say that fantasy is like Gaiman, you know. It's, you know,
he's written so many different types of things.
Yeah, it's like this little spot over here, you know, in fantasy. If it's, you know, there's a lot to fantasy. Epic fantasy is only a little piece, and epic fantasy is what I tend not to read very much of. But again, the Tolkien stuff transcends that. I don't care if you didn't like any of that kind of stuff, I can almost guarantee you'd still like Lord of the Rings. It's just that good.
You know, the only Tolkien I've read is The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I read it is because I was going to go see the movie and wanted to read the book first. And all I can remember thinking is, oh, well, this isn't as challenging to read as I thought. It's actually really fun to read.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe The Hobbit might be different from The Lord of the Rings. But I actually emailed my dad and said, why didn't I read this as a child? Why didn't you make me read this? This is great. But I probably would have liked it even more then.
That's fun.
So do The Lord of the Rings feel that familiar too? Because there's this sense of, like, I don't know, it just feels very familiar, like it was a memory, even though I didn't have it.
Very, very much so. And there's a lot of, I mean, he took 17 years or something like that to write Lord of the Rings. He wrote The Hobbit, and The Hobbit is really a YA book, right? Even though that was before YA was even a, you know, nobody knew what YA meant back then. So he writes The Hobbit, and then he's going to write Lord of the Rings as a sequel to The Hobbit. Well, it took him a long, long time to write it. And it became something completely different. In fact, The Hobbit doesn't quite fit with Lord of the Rings. It doesn't quite fit. It is much... I'm trying to put this in words. It's much deeper, much more meaningful. It's denser. It's not really for kids, although I would never have a problem with any kid reading it, you know. It's for a completely different audience, even though I'm sure that that's not what the publisher wanted. And I listened to some lectures online where they're talking about, you know, the meta fictional stuff that Tolkien was doing, because he was into manuscripts and things. So he was saying, okay, well, The Hobbit, he was started to treat The Hobbit as if it might have been a manuscript and that was passed orally for a long time. And the differences were due to the fact that it was passed that way. And, you know, so it's, I don't know if Tolkien actually ever said that, you know, but there's been so many volumes of his notes and things. It wouldn't surprise me if he played with that idea, but The Lord of the Rings became something much different, you know, in The Hobbit, you know, forget about the movies, but The Hobbit, the book, you know, the ring was not this, it was just a magic ring, you know, it wasn't this object of evil. In Lord of the Rings, it is the ring that this Sauron wants to use to give himself the power that he needs to take over the world. So, you know, it's a heavy load.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's fascinating. I mean, everything about it is fascinating. And it's got this just layer upon layer upon layer. And, you know, I find people talking about Lord of the Rings here or there. You know, there's so many different aspects of it. It's just incredible. You could spend, you could probably, you know, well, Corey Olson seems to have spent his career talking about Lord of the Rings, you know, his academic career.
Wow.
So yeah, it's amazing, but it's well worth reading. I think that I've said that enough.
Yeah. Well, I'll look forward to listening to your other podcast just about that book.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's a lot to say.
There's a whole lot to say. And, you know, we expect it to go long. We'll probably split it up into a few episodes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It is fun. And that's all that I have to say about that. And I will try to come up with something different in the next month's podcast. I will try not to talk about Lord of the Rings. But I'm going to have to read.
You might still be reading it.
I might still be reading it, yeah.
Well, my final book is another. I've had a lot of really challenging books this month. I don't know what it is. But this is The People in the Trees by Hanya Yanagihara. And I almost didn't talk about this book because I am so torn about it. Mm-hmm. Now, I read this one finally because it was also listed for the Tournament of Books. But I had a review copy of it for a while that was needing to be read anyway. And I also noticed that it was on Publishers Weekly top 10 books of 2013. And so I thought, man, you know, I really need to read this book. Everyone's talking about it. It kept getting compared to State of Wonder by Ann Patchett and Mating by Norman Rush, books that I've read both of and I liked. So sat down and read it, and it was a lot different than what I expected. It's about a doctor who just graduated from medical school in about 1950. His name is Norton Perina. And he goes off with this anthropologist for this to Micronesia, to this island of Uvu Uvu, or however you say it, because they've heard that there's a tribe that hasn't been discovered yet, except for, of course, by themselves. And they discover these people that seem to live forever. And so he writes about it. And this is what his past is. But the book is set in the present day when he is an older man and he is in jail for abusing his children, which he adopted from this tribe. And so most of the book is his entries that he's written to his colleague from jail, kind of like as a memoir. Only more of like an academic memoir. He keeps referencing books. And I would keep forgetting that it was fiction. And I'd look up the book. And then it wouldn't exist. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay. This isn't true. Although the author did base it on a case about a doctor that went to jail. But it's not exactly the same story. So the reason I can't even rate it. And, you know, I write reviews in Goodreads for every book I read. And there's a star rating system. And this is just one I've left empty because I can't decide if I should rate it high because the author makes me hate this character so much and she makes me think about it all the time, or if I should rate it low because there are awful rape scenes in it and just horrible things that happen. And I think, honestly, the writing is really good. The fact that she can capture this person so well, even though I very, very much dislike him. I think that speaks to her talent. So it's funny because I finished it maybe a week ago and I've asked a lot of people who've read it I have to talk about it with them because I need to know that they're feeling the same things that I'm feeling. So it is a very compelling book. I think it would be great for book clubs as long as people could get past some of the hard parts.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds difficult.
Yeah. But so thought provoking. So is that good or bad? I don't know. I still don't know.
Oh my gosh. That's tough.
Have you ever had a book like that?
Well, nothing's leaping to mind. Yeah. But, you know, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine it.
Yeah.
I just don't have anything leaping to mind that I could say, oh, yeah, this is an example. I think I may abandon books earlier than you do.
Right.
You know, like if I find it, you know, I don't know, that I disagree with a book is not usually a reason for me to not to read it. So it's not a disagreement, but if they're going places that, you know, make me seriously uncomfortable, there has to be a very good reason for me to keep going.
Well, and honestly, most of the book isn't like that.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go.
It's near the end. So I was trapped.
What are you going
to
do?
I really did feel trapped. Like, I'm already here. I have to read it. The other thing I wanted to say about it is I've been embarking on this challenge. I'm on year 3 right now of trying to read a book from every country.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the other compelling reason to read this book is that there are not a lot of books written about Micronesia or from Micronesia.
Oh, wow.
So that was an appealing thing to have to say.
That's cool. So where's your next country?
Well, I'm currently trying to finish one that's set in Spain.
Oh, cool.
I've read books set in Spain before, though, so I should have picked a different country. Uh-huh. I have one from Iceland in my car.
Ooh, nice.
That I really should be reading instead.
Well, that's cool.
Hopefully I'll get to it for next time. That would be interesting.
That would be good. That would be cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's about all I have to say about that one.
Okay. Well, to finish up this first one... There's an author that I find extremely interesting. Her name is James Tiptree Jr. Yeah, James Tiptree Jr. is a pseudonym for Alice Sheldon, who wrote a lot of science fiction in the 60s. And I'm not sure what made me think of this one, but it's a book that a novelette that I have read a few times. It was published in 1977. It's called The Screwfly Solution. Are you familiar with this one at all?
No.
No. Okay. It's fascinating. I thought it was fascinating anyway. The story opens with Alan. He's in South America doing some humanitarian work. And he reads a letter from his wife, Anne, who's in the United States. And... it's clear that they like each other very much. but she's describing an increasingly disturbing picture of things that are going on in the United States, which is basically a pattern of male aggression. So as the story continues, the male aggression gets more and more pronounced to a point where men are killing women at will all the time. Oof. Women are running away. So I don't want to say too much more about it other than it's really amazing. I thought it was just, it's a masterpiece in my opinion. And I can't even really, I don't want to spoil it by even telling you what the cause of it is, but the cause of it is almost, I mean, just the thought of, you know, the thought exploration of those events is more interesting to me even than the cause. And the Screwfly Solution actually has, there's a point to that title. The title tells you, what's going on. And that's the only hint I guess I'll give.
So is it part of a, a bigger collection, or?
Well, I read it in this book. I've read several of the stories in a book called Her Smoke Rose Up Forever.
Ah.
Yeah, it's a big collection of her short stories.
Yes, I have that on my shelf, and I've never cracked it. Now I want to.
Oh, crack it, yeah.
I'm going to have to go read that one.
The Screwfly Solution is the second story.
Okay.
But, man, she's done a Houston, Houston, Do You Read? Is a great one. Hmm. But anyway, she's just well worth reading. Really, really excellent. but this would make a good movie. It's a science fiction horror story, I would call it.
Wow.
But yeah, run away if you're the women.
what year?
She wrote it in 77.
Oh, okay. You've picked all kind of older stuff this time.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I've been reading.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been disillusioned with the new science fiction. I finally just gave up.
Yeah.
So for SFF Audio, we're going to read a science fiction novel called Up Against It, which Joe Walton called a book that has renewed her faith in science fiction. So I've got to read it now because I respect Joe Walton's opinion quite a bit, and I have high hopes, but yeah. I don't know what to expect. But a lot of the newer stuff in the science fiction fantasy genre, which is where I've read a lot of things, I really am just falling out of love with it, at least with the new stuff that's being written.
Well, and at least for Reading Envy, you mm-hmm. can read whatever you want.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, I'm really looking forward to this podcast and doing it regularly because not that I need an excuse, but I've reached a point in my reading where I suddenly feel like reading a whole bunch of different things. You know, mm-hmm. I was reading science fiction and fantasy almost exclusively for about 10 years there.
Wow.
Which is a long time.
And yeah, it is.
And before that, I would read a lot of stuff. I was working my way through a list of Pulitzer Prize winners. Everything that I read in that list, I loved, by the way. I've only read about, you know, 10 or 12 of them. I was reading a lot of stuff. I never read as much as you do. You know, like I never touched anything on the Booker Prize list or this list. But I would read a lot of different things. I'd read some nonfiction. But then I just got into this science fiction and it lasted a long time. And no, I don't hate it in any way. It's just that in the, you know, like on SF Signal, which is a site that talks about science fiction, often they come out with a list. These are the books that are coming out this month. And I'll look at it. And if I find one that I'm interested in, it's a surprise. That's where I am right now.
Yeah.
You know, because it's full of paranormal romance now, which is something that I have little interest in. Lots of zombie novels, some of which I've read.
Zombies.
Yeah, I've read them and I like some of them. But I'm, you know, I was reviewing for SFF Audio for a long time and I was the one that would receive the audiobooks and you could just... Slowly, I was finding that, you know, most of the stuff we got, I just wasn't interested in anymore.
Right. So it sounds like maybe you need some new lists.
That's what I need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And luckily.
Not in the science fiction genre, no less.
Well, how would you feel about a list of Southern literature?
Well, actually, I like Southern literature. One of my favorite books is Beach Music.
Oh, let's see if that's on here.
Yeah.
They left it out.
No. Did they put any Pat Conroy on there at all?
I'm going to look. So one of the things we thought we would do is include a list of other suggestions, like a list every month, because there's some great lists out there for books.
The list of the month.
The Great Santini.
There you go.
On this list.
Okay.
And The Prince of Tides.
There you go.
But that's it.
Yep. I haven't read either of those, but I would like to. Pat Conroy
is an amazing
writer.
Yeah, I actually own The Great
writer.
Santini and Beach Music, but I have yet to read either of those. So.
Cool.
But this list comes from Book Riot, which is a great book blogging site that's fairly new. But they also worked with a bookseller in Jackson, Mississippi to come up with a list of 100 Southern books you should read, like must-read works. And they're talking like Southern literature, so a lot of it's a little bit older, but not all.
I've got someone else who should be on there.
Who else?
James Lee Burke.
Let's see. Oh, is there an E at the end of his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. Not on here.
Unbelievable. He's from New Orleans. I mean, his books are set in New Orleans. Is that the South? Maybe it's not.
It depends on who you're asking.
I was told that Florida is not the South either.
It isn't. Florida is like the summer or the winter version of the Northeast.
Yep.
No, there's people on here like Faulkner and Kate Chopin and Ron Rash, Cormac McCarthy, Flannery O'Connor. I mean, all of these authors that I feel like now that I live in the South, I should know better than I do. So I bookmarked this list to go through at one point someday.
Cool. Nice.
Eudora Welty, Truman Capote, you know.
Eudora Welty is someone that has been recommended to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Flannery O'Connor, of course.
Of course.
I've read some of her short stories.
Yes.
But Eudora Welty has been recommended to me. I can't even tell you anything that she's written, but...
Well, The Optimist's Daughter is on here.
The Optimist's Daughter is now on my list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I read something by her. Must have really sunk in because I can't remember. Mm-hmm. It was really short.
Hmm.
I tried joining a Southern Lit group to read more Southern Lit. So I've been trying to keep up with them every once in a while, but I hasn't sunk in.
Hmm. Gotcha. Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's a great list.
That sounds like a good list. Well, I'm definitely going to add some of those to my own list. That's great. Once I get done with Lord of the Rings, you've got to say it right. Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
There you go. Excellent. Well, this has been fun.
Yes, it has.
The inaugural podcast.
Dun, dun,
so,
dun.
Yes. So hopefully we will have a guest or two next time we get together.
I hope so. Yeah. If you're interested, just let us know.
And I think we're planning to record the first week of every month.
Yes.
So sometime during that first week, podcast should hit the feed.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thanks a million for listening. And thanks for joining me on this podcast, Jenny.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate it. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Me too.
All right. See you later, everybody.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can find us at readingenvy.com.